Good afternoon, Biscuit Babies. This is William from The Biscuit. You're tuned in, you're dialed in, we're ready to go. You guys know that I like to stir shit up, you know, raise a little controversy here and there. And so does Hairless Ape Conspiracy. They don't only want to make a high quality, perfect t-shirt, which they do, but they want to make you think, and that's what they do on their blogs on the website. They give you different books to read and information on, you know, how you can better your life or maybe just think a little bit differently. So be sure to go check them out at hairlessapeinc.com. Use the promo code BISCUIT10 to save yourself 10% off at checkout. Best t-shirts I've ever worn, which I'm not even lying. Stickers, all that good shit. Go check them out. And just knowledge, if you're looking, you know, to get out of a slump you're in, go there, and they definitely have the tools there to inspire you. Are you inspired to get into a float tank? Well, you fucking should be. Go to Mount Vernon, Ohio. Go see Chad. Lucid Float Spas. Tell them The Biscuit sent you. Save half off. That's a saving over $30 on your first float at Lucid Float Spas. Yeah, I still sound a little sick. Sorry, you're just going to have to deal with it. I'm not going to sit out. You know, I'm not calling in sick or calling off. And then in Michigan, they said calling in. And it's fucked up. That's from hanging out with my wife too much. And I'm giving you guys what you want. All you fucking UK people always sending me a message. Why don't you have somebody from the UK on? Oh, you sound like you're from London. Well, I did it. Scott Ancliffe from Sheffield is on today. Enjoy it, UK. You fucks.
Now Probert got the right hand free.
He's loose with the right hand, and he starts to retaliate, and down goes Nylon, and the two of them are hammering each other.
Knights of Columbus, that hurt!
It's old time hockey.
Enforcer of all hockey podcasts. It's The Biscuit. It's The Biscuit.
Damn it! That goal regulation size of one!
The enforcer of all hockey podcasts.
God help the fucking day if fighting's ever banned. There's a country we'll stop working on so bad this fucking can.
Hi, everybody. It's The Biscuit Podcast.
Hey, you wanna go? Yeah, okay. Good luck, man.
All right, as promised, I have Scott Ancliffe on the line today. He's a teacher, nutritionist, I think PT's a physical therapist, right?
Yeah, personal trainer, yeah.
Personal trainer, that's it. You actually play some beer league and then getting off and started and dabbled in hockey media and taking off with that. How you doing, Scott?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. William, how are you?
I'm pretty good. I've got a little bit of a head cold and haven't had a beer in 28 days. So besides that, I'm okay.
Oh, wow. You know, you're doing well to not have a beer in 28 days. I don't think I'd last, 28 hours.
It was a terrible idea, sober October, but I'm really looking forward to fucking 1st of November. That's for sure.
Oh, God, yeah. I bet you're going to crush a few beers then.
Oh, yeah, probably 15, 19, 20, you know, get it in pretty good. Now, I got to warn you, in my intro, I did my best UK accent, and I'm sure that's always annoying. Why are you guys better at doing an American accent than we are at doing – is it because of the different dialects over there?
Yeah, there's so many – you know, it's so strange because it's such a small country, the UK, but there's so many different accents and dialects. You know, you could drive 20 minutes down the road. I live in a place called Chesterfield. It's just outside of Sheffield. It's halfway between Sheffield and Nottingham. And the accents vary so much. I could drive 20 minutes into Nottingham, and the accent is totally different to the Chesterfield accent, the Sheffield accent. And, you know, it's so strange because, like I say, you only have to go 15 minutes down the motorway.
Yeah.
And it's a totally different accent.
And so, you guys can fucking tell the difference too. You're like, oh, that guy's from Nottingham. That guy's from Chester. Like here it's like, okay, that guy's from the South probably, or like Boston. There's like three or four different ones, but it's like a big general area instead of like you said, down the highway 20 minutes. And it's like, oh, you're not from here, bud.
It's very strange and very, very unique in their own ways. The accents, I mean, like the Welsh accents are very different. The Scottish accents. I know you've had albeit no teeth, an Irish guy on there who's got a very different accent as well. And so it's very odd, but we do seem to be able to tell where everyone's from. And like you say, with the US accents, you've got like the Texan accents, and the Deep South, and the Boston kind of accents. That sort of thing. So yeah, they're all very different.
For sure, man. Now, how did you get into ice hockey, being over there in Chesterfield?
To cut a long story short, it was an auntie of mine who had a season ticket to the Sheffield Steelers, who are, you know, one of the biggest teams in the UK. And I think it was about 5 years old, and she came round on the way to the game. And I've got three older sisters, and they all went to like the fair, what comes to town each year that evening. And my mum said I was too young to go, so I was sort of, you know, crying, and because I couldn't get my own way, I couldn't go. So my auntie sort of said, "Oh well, you know, I'm off to the hockey. I've got a free ticket because the person she goes with couldn't make it." So she's like, "Oh, I'll take him to the hockey." And 5 year old, I went to my first game, and you know, the rest is history. But you know, I was hooked from there, and a couple of years later, we all got season tickets as a family, and I had season ticket up until 10 years ago, until I then got into the media work with the Sheffield Steelers. So it then progressed. I did radio commentary. I've done a bit of TV work, written hockey articles for the Steelers, written for a few magazines and newspapers, all sort of, you know, in my own time, and most of it for free, because over here hockey is, you know, it's still a niche sport, and compared to the likes of football, you know, what you guys call soccer, and it's a tough sort of market to compete in. So yeah, and I started playing at the age of, I think, 16, and still play, like say, beer league to this day, and you know, love it. It's a good feeling being in the locker room with the boys, and you know, chugging down a few beers after, and it's all good fun.
Absolutely. Well, I saw on you know, your avatar here that you got, you're not only playing, but you're doing pretty well for yourself. You got some fucking trophies there.
Yeah, we've got a pretty good team. We've got a lot of sort of ex semi pro players and guys who played at, you know, a fairly good level in the past, and you know, more than anything, it's a good group of guys. We've had pretty much the same core of players now for about 5 or 6 years, and you know, we all will sort of go home from the rink, and you know, we have our own lives, but you know, when we get in that locker room, you're a close-knit group, and a bunch of guys will do anything for each other. So I think that's one of the things I love most about the sport is, you know, that camaraderie and you know, the banter and
absolutely
the fun with the guys.
Absolutely. Now, do they have it set up like over here where there's like A-League, which is like guys who used to play in college or in the minesies, and then like down to like D-League where you would find me out there skating?
In sort of men's league, in rec hockey, we call it, basically you have some tournaments against each other, but you tend to find your level of ability. So you'll tend to organize games against teams who are a similar level. There's no real structured league as such, but there are more tournaments and things like that, and in-house leagues and that sort of thing. So it is becoming a little bit more established, the sort of beer league scene over in the UK. But most of the time it's, we'll contact this club, see if they want to have a game. You know, some teams will say, oh yeah, we'll put out essentially a B team, a B level team. And then they'll sort of lie and they'll put out, you know, a load of A level guys, a load of sort of ringers sort of thing. So
yeah,
some underhand tactics going on to an extent, but you know, it's all good fun.
Well, that's got to help getting people into it, you know, because once, like you said, once you go when you're 5 years old and you can, like, the smell of the ice rink and everything, it hooks you almost immediately. But then if you got guys just in there playing and, you know, with everybody, it's going to get some of those, you know, soccer hooligans into the game, especially the violent ones, I would think.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the sort of new age fans who go to the game now here in the UK, I think they're particularly hooked with the fighting aspects of it, and particularly because it's more a North American kind of style of league over here in the UK. A lot of the sort of ex-tough guys who've kind of drop through the ranks in the AHL or the Coast League, come to the UK as a bit of a stepping stone to either try and get into Europe, or, you know, they want to retire over here and play a few games. I know Brian McGrattan played over here last year, and, you know, we've got a lot of tough guys in the league now. We've got, you know, players like Jacob Doty, who's, you know, sort of a young guy, but he's, yeah, very physical. We've got Josh Grattan over here as well in the UK at the minute. It was putting up some good numbers as well, you know, to say, I guess, in Europe he struggled a little bit. He's doing well over here in the UK. There's Zach Fitzgerald, who, you know, who had a good career in North America. And in the past, there's been a lot of players like Andre Payet.
No, Westgrath spent a little time over there before he hung him up.
Yeah, Kevin Westgarf, Jason Rushton. You know, it's been a good sort of league for the tough guys, and even, you know, some skilled guys. We had Theo Fleury over here for a year.
Well, that's got to be good to get the, you know, the assets in the seats over there, you know, having some NHL names to get people out to the games at least.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even in the recent lockout, there was like Drew Miller over here. The lockout before that, there was sort of Rob Davidson, Steve McKenna, Nick Boynton, you know, Scott Nichol.
Is Fitzgerald on the Steelers?
He was last year. Okay. He played for the team now for a few years, and they had a bit of a clear out of the Steelers. They got in 16 new faces this season, so a proper wholesale kind of change. And he's now up in Glasgow playing for his former team, the Brayhead Clan. They've sort of changed names now to Glasgow Clan, so he's back up there. He's got the C in his jersey, and is, you know, he's enjoying it from all accounts.
Now, he got in a little bit of trouble last year, didn't he?
He got a, you know, a couple of suspensions.
I thought so.
He likes to mix it up, and, you know, he's one of those old school players, and unfortunately a dying breed in the game we love, you know, where I guess the NHL's turning a bit soft, and, you know, he's still got that old school type of style of play, which is great, and, you know, he really gets it. And, you know, he's from doing the media work with the Steelers, I've got to know Fitzy quite well over the last couple of years, and done interviews with him, and he's such a good, genuine, down-to-earth guy. And, you know, it's a shame how, you know, things turned out in Sheffield, because he was a bit of a cult hero, and you know, but now the Clan have kind of welcomed him back with open arms, and he's doing well up there.
Well, I'm glad he's wearing the C. He's definitely well deserved. I've always been a big fan of Fitzy. Now, it seemed in the earlier, you know, maybe even 5 years ago, that fighting over there really wasn't accepted that well, or maybe I just had a misinterpretation of it, but it seems like from what I've seen this year, or maybe it's just more because people are actually, you know, recording from the crowd and whatnot, that they've really accepted it, and, you know, there's not a ton of tilts, but there's not in the NHL either, but the ones that they're having are really solid fights, and the fans are really starting to dig it.
Yeah, it kind of goes through phases because, you know, there's a lot of fighting in the mid-2000s, and then it kind of petered out a little bit, and I guess it kind of had a bit of a downward spiral, or a slow turn for a few years, probably in the from 2012 onwards for a few years, but it's picked up a bit the last few years. I mean, there's been guys come over to the league like Jay Rosehill, who's, you know, got involved in quite a few tilts, and you know, it's good to see, because I mean, who goes out and grabs a coffee when a fight's on? You know, everyone's on the feet, everyone's sort of filming it, and it's those sort of things what get the new fans hooked. So, you know, there's definitely a lot more positives than negatives with the whole, you know, fighting debate. And for me, it's always going to be a big part of the game, and a part I want to see for many years to come.
Well, I've always thought it should be a big part, especially in the UK, where, you know, like Ireland or England, some besides soccer, it's like boxing is right up there. You know, Conor McGregor being in Ireland now, that, like, you have like Anthony Joshua, who's like a huge star in the UK, and that's what he does. He punches people. So it's like, the people want it. Why not just let them go?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's like rugby over here is a physical sport. A lot of fans do like the sort of physical sports. So to, you know, have hockey, I guess, not have as much fighting in it. It's a strange one because, like, the, you know, the fans in the UK love hockey fights, and you'll always get, you know, a minority of fans who are trying to preach to go down a more European style of play,
yeah,
you know, like a softer kind of Swedish league. And, you know, with the type of players who come over to the UK, it'll never be a European style league. It'll always have a heavy North American style influence, with those guys, like you say, who either want to make the stepping stone to Europe or whose playing days are almost done and they kind of want to either come over to the UK to see a bit of scenery, or a lot of the time teams tie up players through university sort of deals to do the masters. And, you know, players who might not necessarily take a look at the league generally are coming over because they get a good university sort of school type package thrown in. So that's attracted a, you know, a good high caliber of player. And players like Patrick Dwyer, who've played in the NHL up until recently, are now in the UK this season. And, you know, it's a really good standard. I'd say now the standard is probably higher than the ECHL, but not quite as high as the AHL, even though there are a lot of AHL quality players over here as well.
Well, yeah, it definitely has to be enticing for someone like, you know, say McGranton last year, who, you know, self-proclaimed loves to fight. So it's like, well, you know, he could go play in Russia, but it's, you know, that's more of a don't touch me league, where he could go play in the UK and still do what he loves to do and play hockey. And it's just like kind of the perfect fit there for that type of player. Because like you said, in Sweden, or, you know, even the KHL, you're not really touching anybody. It's just that's just the way they've had it. So like some guys will go play later in the twilight of the career knowing that, oh, I'm not going to have to worry about getting buried. I can just kind of go skate around and play.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, McGratton, even when he came over here, there weren't too many customers who wanted to fight him.
Hell no.
So, you know, the guy's nuts, and, you know, he's absolutely nails. And I think Rosehill fought him a couple of times, and Fitzy wanted to go with him during an important league deciding game, and McGratton kind of turned him down, and those two never, unfortunately, dropped the gloves while they were over here, which, you know, is gutting, because, you know, it's one of the, you know, the fights what the fans wanted to see. And you know, they both wanted to go at different games and it weren't quite right. And I think, you know, coach's orders kind of took precedent, unfortunately. And, but yeah, you know, the hockey fighting in the UK is on the up, and I'm glad to sort of see that.
Yeah, fucking A, that's great, man. We need it. Now, who has, would you say, the wildest culture in the Elite Ice Hockey League over there? Because, you know, you always see, like, the fucking World Cup, like, a one goal goes in and the bar erupts and it's insane. Who would you say has the best hockey culture out of, you know, all the cities that have a hockey club there?
Like the atmosphere, of games? That's a tough one because the teams, your top four teams, I use top four in inverted commas because, you know, they're the teams who have generally in the past done well, Sheffield, Nottingham, Belfast and Cardiff. And Cardiff this year, you know, they've played 9 games, they've won 8, lost 1. They're going on a tear at the minute. You know, they've got a really good fan following. They've got a smaller kind of barn. I think they only hold about 3,500 seats, maybe 4,000. But, you know, they pack that out most nights and the atmosphere in there is rocking. Nottingham have got a bigger arena. Sheffield have got a bigger arena, which hold up to about 9,000 fans. Mm. On average, I think they get about 6,500 a game. So, you know, not a bad attendance. But, you know, some of the Scottish teams who have got the smaller rinks, their atmospheres in their barns are, you know, really intimidating because, you know, the rinks hold maybe 1,500 people, some of the smaller Scottish rinks.
Yeah.
So, like, Fife in Scotland, they've got a really good atmosphere. You know, the fans and the atmosphere is quite, I guess, volatile. A bit like, you know, the old team in Youngblood. I forget the team where who Racky plays for. You know, that kind of atmosphere there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Now, Fife's got a young man who seems to be tearing up the league right now, and Paul Crowder, who seems to be leading in goals, assists. Basically, if there's a stat for it, that dude's just fucking tearing it up.
Yeah, yeah, he's doing really well. He played in Cardiff last year, who won the league. And in Cardiff, I guess he was deemed surplus to requirements. I think he was on their third line and didn't really get much sort of power play time, special team time. So now he's, you know, top line power play, and he's kind of thriving on that increase in ice time. And he's doing well. He's a sort of a gritty player who go to those hard areas. He'll go to the front of the net. He'll work the corners well. And, you know, he's getting his just desserts, I guess. He's you know, got his head down. He's working hard and he's putting up the crazy numbers.
Now, whenever Cardiff is brought up, Biscuit alumni Dr. Victoria Silverwood's a big Cardiff Devils fan. So every time that I hear about them, I always have to tell her, go Giants. Because I, for whatever reason, I just followed Belfast and was like, well, that's going to be my favorite team over there. So I always give her shit, even though, you know, the Devils have been pretty successful the last few years.
Yeah, Victoria, she knows her stuff. You know, she's done really well with the, you know, the Ice Guardians documentary. And, you know, she's a nice lady, big Cardiff fan. And, yeah, I've not seen her for a while at, you know, a game when Cardiff rocked up into town, but it's always interesting to sort of read her tweets and get her take on things. And, you know, she's done really well, and it's great to see someone, you know, particularly I guess a lady in the sport doing so well and on a big scene.
Yeah, she's the best, man. She's a smart cookie.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And like you say, you know, she's Cardiff through and through, and she's got the Welsh accent, and yeah, she's been a big Devils fan for a number of years.
Yeah, she. Even if she says like, "Hello, William, how you doing?" I just feel dumber. Like that kind of accent. I'm just like, "Oh, I'm a fucking caveman." Now you're a nutritionist and a physical therapist.
Yeah. I sort of worked as a nutritionist before I went into teaching, and same with personal training. You know, it's always been an area I've been interested in, and once upon a time, I looked at going into sports conditioning. You know, working with like elite teams, it was something I considered, but I then sort of always had in the back of my mind. Working in teaching, and so now I'm a primary school teacher. I teach 9 and 10 and 11 year olds, and I really enjoy it, so I think I've found my calling, really.
Well, good. Well, that's what I was going to ask you, if you've ever had worked with hockey players on that, you know, on that sense in nutrition or, you know, physical training or anything like that.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, more players at a sort of semi-professional level when I was kind of getting my foot in the door and trying to go down the sport route. I got in touch with some guys who I knew who played at a good level, who I played junior with and who I played university hockey with, and kind of contacted a few of them and said, look, you know, can I write you a program? And, you know, in exchange, can you, you know, sort of promote my services a little bit? And yeah, kind of did that, and they liked the programs they received. And just unfortunately, I don't know, I guess it was the lack of security in the sort of nutrition and sport market here in the UK prompted me to look into a more secure career, and teaching was my call, really.
Well, it's all about being happy, man, and that's it's an influential spot too. So I mean, you can even help out hockey in you know, Sheffield or Chesterfield, where you're at, because I remember being like 8 or 9 and it's like third grade over here, but having a teacher who was like, you know, I like Pearl Jam, or I like wakeboarding. So you're like a kid and you're like, oh, what the fuck is wakeboarding? Or, you know, I like Pearl Jam too, man. So if you're like, oh, did you guys catch the hockey match this weekend or whatever, maybe get some kids into it that way and help grow the sport. So it's a pretty good spot to be in, really.
Yeah, I mentioned to my class, I talk about hockey, and, you know, when I've moved to a new school this year, closer to home, and as I got to know the children, I mentioned about, you know, I play hockey, and I've spoke to them, do any of them ever go to any games? And some have been to the Steelers, and the Steelers have got a promotion on at the minute of £5 games for, like, adults, so certain games during the year. The games cost £5, which is about, I think, about $8, $9, something like that.
Nice.
So, yeah, normally games are about £17, which is, I think, about $35. I've sort of been promoting it a little bit and saying, oh, yeah, these games are coming up. You know, if you're interested, try and take your parents, or, you know, pester power and try and get them to go. And Trying to promote it at grassroots level is how the game's going to grow in the UK. And
for sure,
you know, if I do my bit via sort of social media, or if I do my bit in the school and mention it to the children and the staff, you know, it's only good for the game, right?
Absolutely. Maybe you could get a field trip or something through the school. That'd be pretty righteous.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool idea. I never thought of that, and I might look into that now.
Absolutely, man. Now you. You've been live tweeting games and taking pictures and, you know, interviewing guys. Is that something you want to continue to do as you, you know, further your career in hockey media?
Yeah, I mean, with the hockey media, like I say, I've done it for 10 years, and just with teaching, it's quite an intense profession where I work a lot of hours. So I guess in the last year or two, the games, the hockey media side of things with the articles I've written have kind of took a bit of a back step. But it is something I'd like to keep on doing just if I had more time. But,
yeah, you know, time's like a bitch.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mentioned to you off the air, I'm toying with the idea of a podcast, and I put the feelers out the other day on Twitter, and it garnered quite a bit of interest. I think there's a demand there for a Sheffield-based podcast, so that's something I'm potentially looking into, because, you know, you can probably gather I like to talk. And
Well, like I told you in our conversation earlier, I say, you know, fuck the potential, just do it, man. If the feelers are out there and people want it, you'd be great at it. So I really think you should, you know, hang up with me today and then just go on and record another podcast and just get it started. The hardest part is just starting the damn thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I've spoke to a few guys who've got podcasts, and they've given me some good advice so far. So, I'm off work this coming week. So it might be the time to look into it now.
Well, you heard it here first, Biscuit Baby. Scott's podcast will be out next week. Be sure to tune into it.
Thanks for that shout out, man. I appreciate it.
And I want to say thanks to the, the Five for Fighting and Darren from Southpaw, you know, for spreading the word on the Biscuit. And because they have such a large reach that, you know, getting people like you in Sheffield or Chesterfield and Dublin or wherever the fuck ever really helps the show out. So I just want to shout out to those guys too.
Yeah, they do a great job, those guys.
Yeah, they're the best. Well, we started a new segment last week with Colin Chamberlain, the stand-up comedian and host of Unhealthy Scratch Podcast. And we're going to continue it on today with you, Scott, if that's all right. And it's called Thoughts on Some Shit.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds good. I can talk shit, so I can get my thoughts on some shit as well. That's cool.
All right, man. Well, first off, it's Halloween season here. Do you guys have Halloween? I know that sounds ignorant, but it's like everywhere, global, right?
Yeah. It's I know it tends to be bigger in North America. It's, you know, you guys are really into it over there in the US, and it has taken off a little bit in the UK. Where I live, I kind of live in the middle of the woods and in a countryside, so we don't get too many trick-or-treaters knocking on the door, and you know, where I used to live before we did, but not so much now. But yeah, you know, it is pretty big. It's kind of like Black Friday. It's something what's come over from the States, what, you know, the UK sort of audience is buying into a bit.
Oh god. And, you guys do Black Friday now?
Yeah,
that's a fucking terror.
It's crazy people fighting over like $100 TVs, what you won't buy generally any other time because of a piece of shit or whatever. And, you know, it's like, why would you even want to get out of bed and queue at 6 a.m. to, you know, fight over a trashy TV or whatever?
Dude, these fucking people get up at like 2 in the morning and would go wait in like Best Buy parking lot to get like a Bluetooth speaker. And you're just like, what the fuck are you doing?
I know, some people are crazy, right? But the Halloween thing is pretty big. It's not really my kind of thing. I don't really bother too much with it. But, you know, I guess teaching in school, I might make an effort. Well, I'm off work next week, so I won't be in school teaching for it. So I've kind of dodged the bullet with that.
Yeah,
one, so.
Yeah. Well, the reason
fan of dressing up.
Yeah, the reason I ask is, for whatever reason, NHL players seem to fucking love hockey or Halloween, and they all dress up, and I wanted to see if you had seen any of the guys dressed up, and I'll give you some of the ones I'd seen and maybe get your thoughts on it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Now, the creepiest one I saw, and it really just frightened me, and I was worried about his safety, was TJ Oshie, and I'm assuming his wife or girlfriend, where she is Cruella De Vil from 101 Dalmatians, and he's down on his hands and knees as a Dalmatian it really creeped me the fuck out, dude.
Yeah, that sounds pretty disturbing. I've not seen the photos, but I'll check it out later. But that does sound just pretty freaky.
Just don't, because it looks like he's about to get pegged. It's it's creepy, dude. One I thought was pretty cool, little grim, was Duchesne and his wife. They're expecting a child, and they have like skeleton suits on, and then like in her stomach is a little skeleton baby. I was like, oh yeah, I've never seen that. So hats off to that one.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's pretty original as well. You know, you see a lot of the outfits and it's like, oh, I've seen that before. But, you know, that sounds pretty cool, that one. We'll, tip the old hat to that one.
Now, Shattenkirk went as the Night King from Game of Thrones, and he had a professional makeup company do his makeup, and he looked fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, that sounds cool. Maybe a bit of a try hard, though.
Yeah, right? It probably cost him like $1,000 to get the shit done.
Jeez, you know, he'll probably turn heads in the bar, dressed like that. But, you know, probably a bit of a try hard on that one.
Yeah, that's a New York state of mind kind of thing.
Yeah, keeping up with the Joneses.
Jacob Slavin and his wife, I don't know what they were, but he was like a pine tree, and I just thought it looked cool. That was one where I hadn't seen anything like that one. She was like a unicorn or some shit. I don't know if it's like from Fortnite or something, maybe. I'm not really sure, but it was the only one I saw that way, so I get a tip of the hat to that one, too.
Yeah, fair play. That one sounds interesting.
And then the boys from Dallas, Sagan, Ben, and Radulov, were Super Mario characters from like Mario Kart. And that, nice. And they had the fucking cars, too. So I was like, that's probably my winner, except for the Orlando Solar Bears. Did you see that?
I did, yeah. I saw the outfits there. The jerseys and the socks, and yeah, they're pretty cool. It's funny, actually, because I was talking to, a friend of mine who he used to coach. He was the assistant coach here in Sheffield, a guy called Mark Lefebvre. He's an assistant coach now in Orlando, and I was talking to him only the other day about the jerseys, and we were saying the pretty sick, pretty cool outfits. And I'm not really one for buying jerseys because – playing hockey myself, I've got a ton of them, and I don't really tend to wear them at games or anything like that. But you know, if I was to buy a jersey, I think I'd go for something like that, you know, just for the novelty factor. And
absolutely,
they're pretty cool. They look really good.
Full skeleton setup, man. Those are pretty sick. I'm sure that'll be copied from years to come now.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that kind of set the benchmark, I guess, for hockey jerseys.
All right. Now, the other day, the Ottawa Senators were playing the Boston Bruins, and Mr. Borowiecki was down in the crease. There was a little scrum. You know, the puck was loose. Yeah. Vakanen skated in and caught an elbow right to the chin, right in front of the crease. Vakanen got hurt. Borowiecki said, you know, I'm protecting the crease. He gets one game suspension. What do you think of the elbow and the call for suspension of one game?
Yeah, like you say, you're protecting your goalie. You know, there's a scramble in the crease, and Vakanen comes storming in like he was going to, you know, run the
full
guys
bore
in front of the net, right?
Full and, bore!
Exactly, you know, Borowiecki just doing what any guy would do, and, you know, he said he didn't mean it, he said he wasn't intentional, but, you know, and he needed to have more control over his arm, but geez, if anyone came near my goalie, I'd run at them with my elbow going as well. So.
Yeah, I mean, you see when they zoom in, he kind of looks back and sees homeboy skating fast as fuck in there. You're trying to win the game, so, I mean, he definitely put his elbow up on purpose. Maybe he didn't want to hit him in the head. Either way, you know, he'll definitely think next time before skating in that fast to come after a puck. I didn't hate the elbow. I think if he wouldn't have been injured, it made it not – maybe wouldn't have got a game suspension. But if you're playing defense and he's right in front of the crease, there's shit going on everywhere. You know, I don't think I could say I wouldn't have done the same thing.
No, absolutely. And, 10, 15 years ago, that's probably not even a 2-minute minor.
That's what I'm saying, man. And,
yeah.
And it's like, if you don't like it, I mean, somebody could have, I mean, Boston's not a bunch of pussies. Somebody could have done something about it. Like, all right, you elbowed our dude in the head, you know, and I know Borowiecki has come out and said this year he's done fighting or, you know, he's worried about concussions or I think he's just, you know, getting old and turning into a bit of a puss, but I don't know. I think one game might be a little much. And like you said, you know, 10 years ago, it would have been, you know, maybe a roughing.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you've got to protect your goalie, because if not, it sets a dangerous precedent that anyone can come near your goalie and skate in like Tarzan. And, you know, then all of a sudden, you know, you've got your goalie been ran. And so, yeah, you need to set the bar by doing something there, and it's unfortunate. Obviously, Vakanainen came away with it with a concussion or suspected concussion. But you know, if you're going to storm in like that, you've got to expect to get a bit of rough treatment.
Absolutely, and I'll try to equate it to other sports when I see something like that. And you know, I've seen worse elbows in basketball, and nobody get in trouble for it. So I'm kind of like, you know, now the NHL is going to be softer than basketball. It's getting scary.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not a good path it's going down, and fortunately, it's not something we want to see. And you know, you ask anyone, you know, the guys who are still playing the old school sort of players, even some of the younger guys coming through, know that fighting and the physical side of the game is a huge part of the game. And you know, if that went, then geez, I know it's slowly fading out now. And but if that went, then you know, I'd lose all interest in sort of North American hockey. And
for sure. Yeah. For sure. Well, speaking of suspensions, Tom Wilson, who has the 20-game suspension for the hit on, I think it was a Vancouver Canuck player, hit the guy in the head, whatever. They withheld his 20-game suspension after, lowering a guy who had domestic violence to 18 games. So the message now is you can beat your girlfriend up, but don't hit anybody head on the ice because you will get – and yeah, Tom Wilson has a pass, but I was truly surprised that they – kept the 20 games.
Yeah, it's he went through an appeal, didn't he, recently?
I think
Bettman kind of upheld it, and they had a 7.5-hour hearing. There was a 31-page kind of report published from it, and it was the hit. I think it was on Sundquist, wasn't it, St. Louis?
Yeah.
And, it's 20 games. It's like a quarter of the season.
Sure is.
I know he's sort of, I think he's been suspended 4 times in the past 13 months, but it's the size of the guy. He skates well for his size, and even if he kind of pulled out on a hit, it'd still do damage, you know, because of how big he is, how good of a skater he is for his size, and, you know, and he's a valuable player. I mean, he's been playing on that top unit with Ovi, and he's just signed a new 6-year, $31 million contract. And obviously McClellan thinks a lot of him in Washington, and so do the fans. But, you know, it is a big suspension. And, you know, I guess when they've suspended guys like Rafi Torres and things for big hits, they want to almost set the bar. And it's a tough one because I respect George Parros a lot. You know, he's a guy who knows the game, and he's obviously knows the physical side, but I don't know if he's trying to send a message more so. And it's a shame, but I think, you know, they've thrown the book at him with him being a repeat offender and having so many sort of suspendable hits. And for Sundquist, he was kind of, he got his shot off and he was admiring his shot too much, and you cut through the middle there, you've got to expect someone to come in, and you're in the trolley tracks, right? And
that's the thing. What did you think was gonna happen? I mean, yeah, the hit on the head is a bummer, but it's like you came through the middle, and I just am surprised that A, it was 20 games, B, Austin Watson got his 26 games removed to 18 games, and it just was like, what are we saying here? What are we going for? And it's like, you want to put the best product you can out on ice. And I can't imagine that they haven't heard in views from Tom Wilson being out. I'm not checking into Capitals games knowing that Tom Wilson's not playing.
Yeah, exactly. It's viewing numbers must go down, right? Because when he's on the ice, you know, something's going to happen. There's going to be a spark.
That potential is always there for something to go down.
Oh, absolutely. And, it holds teams accountable. You know, players are looking over the shoulder every 2 minutes when Wilson's out there. And, you know, same when like guys like Reeves are out there. And, it makes people accountable. And with him being out of the lineup now, it's, like you say, I think viewing numbers will be down. And, you know, for me, if it was taking into account, you know, his previous sort of suspensions, I probably would have gave him maybe 6 games or 7 games, you know, not 20. 20 is, you know, excessive. It's a quarter of the guy's season. You know, he's a young 24-year-old guy, and, you know, for him to be out so much, it's not good.
I think 10 max, I mean, and that would have been like a huge statement, but it's like, oh, man. Brian Boyle, who you know, was diagnosed with chronic myeloid leukemia last season.
Yep.
33 years old, ended up playing last year, and then it comes out this week that he is in remission, man. That dude is got to be one of the toughest guys to ever suit up, man.
No, absolutely, and, you know, I'm a big Boyle fan, how he plays the game, and, you know, watching the road to the Winter Classic and just seeing how humble the guy is, and, you know, he comes from a good family, a big family from what I gather. I think he's one of about seven children. And, yeah, he's... you know, just to go through what he's gone through and still play the game. And, you know, he obviously played in the All-Star game and got the Masters Award. Yeah, you know, and it was a great, I guess, a great, you know, thing for the league to do, to give him those sort of awards and to recognize, you know, what he's gone through. And on a personal level, I lost my mum to AML, to acute myeloid leukemia, 3 years ago now. And, you know, to see that firsthand and how tough it is on someone, you know, to then hear about Boyle being in remission, it's like a big victory in terms of, on a personal level, I don't know the guy, but having, you know, lost someone close to me through leukemia, it's great to see that people can overcome it. And, you know, I mean, he's got 3 goals in 6 games for New Jersey. You know, they're on a good run at the minute, and it just shows how valuable he is to them.
Absolutely. And that, I mean, that's a great point too, because, you know, there's, I mean, thousands upon thousands of people that have leukemia. So this kind of story is always good on just a human level to see that, you know, persistence and strength and things can and be beaten, or someone, you know, as yourself who has a personal story kind of ties in that human bond that, you know, these guys are still human. They're not these, you know, gods on skates. I think it's really good for the league and, you know, for anybody that has a heart, really.
Absolutely, it's you know, humbling, I guess, to see. And like you say, these players who we almost see as godlike to an extent, or, you know, I know a lot of fans do, for them to see that, you know, the players just as a normal person, and for them to go through, you know, these sort of things, it just kind of makes it all more I don't know, just I guess real, I guess.
Yeah, and, yeah.
Yeah, it's good to see him come through it, and, you know, hopefully he'll have a good career ahead of him still. He's, you know, 33. He's, you know, got, you know, another 4 or 5 years in the NHL if he wants to, I guess.
For sure. Speaking of some real-ass shit, Sidney Crosby had, you know, finally wakes up and scores a goal, his first of the season against the Oilers the other day, and then has a game-winning goal against Edmonton that may be the best goal I've ever seen in my life. He did exactly what Sidney Crosby does, skated better than anybody on the ice, made a fool of the winger there who was out on an island trying to play defense on Crosby anyhow.
Yeah.
And then just backhands it so smoothly. I've watched it probably 100 times. And then he scored again last night backhanded. There's a new joke going around that he's done shooting forehand because it's not exciting anymore and it's boring.
he's mixing it up a bit now.
Yeah, so he's just going to do everything backhanded now. But there's this huge argument in hockey, and I wanted to talk to you about it. You know, is Sidney still the best, or is Connor McDavid the best? Now, I've got some numbers here for you before I get your opinion. And they weren't shocking to me because I think Sidney is still better than Connor McDavid. So I wanted to compare them, you know, 3 years, their first 3 years. McDavid's playing in his fourth now, so I didn't do the numbers on that one. But so games played, who do you think had the most games played in the first 3 years of their career?
Ooh, oh, God, good question. I know they both suffered a bit with injuries.
Both have been injury prone. That's why it's interesting.
Yeah. Ooh, good question. I don't know. Probably, I don't know. I reckon Sid's probably, did Sid play more?
Sidney played more. Advantage, yep. Sid. That's one. Now, goals. Who has the most goals through their first 3 years in the NHL? Sidney or McJesus?
Ooh, all right, I'm going to go with Sid again.
That is correct, Scott. 2 for 2. Advantage, right. Sidney. 2-0. Assist. Who has the most apples in their first 3 years? Sidney Crosby or Connor McDavid?
Right. 3 for 3. Hopefully I'm going to go Sid again.
Boom! We got it. We're catching a fucking trend here there, Oilers fans. Now, One would assume that if Sydney had the goals and assists, points would also be his. So we'll go 4-for-4 Sydney with that one. And it's 294 to 256, if you're wondering, points through their first 3 years, Sydney. So quite a bit more, actually. Power play goals, Sydney or Connor McDavid?
Ooh, wow.
Now, this one is fucking lopsided.
Nice. Sid again. It's got to be Sid.
Oh, five. 35 to 11.
Wow. That's huge. That's a massive difference.
Brutal.
Yeah.
Shooting percentage. Scott, who you got?
I'm going to go Sid because he likes to shoot from all angles. He likes to go for the tight angle shots to catch a goalie's off.
Wrong.
Oh, really?
McDavid got him at his best was his rookie year. He shot 15%. Sydney's was 14%.
Oh, geez. So tight, though. Close.
5-1, Sidney Crosby. Face-off percentage, and this would be their highest face-off percentage through their first 3 years. Who do you got, Scott?
Man. Tough one. Gonna stick with my boy Sid.
Sidney Crosby, it fucking is 51 in his third year. To McJesus's best was 43%. So yeah. It's not even debatable, you young fucks. Sidney Crosby is so much better than Connor McDavid. And then I wanted to go, you know, because I heard somebody call Sidney Crosby soft the other day. I don't know if they were trolling or whatever, but I was like, man, he's taken care of business a few times in his career. So I went over to dropyourgloves.com, and I pulled up Sidney's fight card, and I pulled up Connor McDavid's fight card. Connor McDavid's fight card does not exist. He has never fought in the NHL.
Jeez. Brutal.
Okay, exactly. I was like, oh, man, that's fucking sad. He had, like, a bitch fit argument with somebody the other night, but besides that, that's it. He had two fights in the OHL, 1-0-1.
Oh, jeez.
Now, the so-called soft Sidney Crosby has had 9 fighting majors in his career.
Yeah, it's not bad. That's not bad going.
That's not bad at all for, you know, a superstar. And he's 4-1-1 with 3 unfair fights, as documented by Drop Your Gloves. So not only is he fighting, you know, a handful of times, which a guy who's not supposed to fight, but he's fucking winning the fights he's taken.
Yeah, he's you know, he's a strong guy as well. I mean, if you watch him on the puck, he does so well with, you know, he shields the puck well, he protects the puck.
He might be the best at protecting the puck to ever play the game.
Oh, yeah, you know, I agree with that. And how much room he creates for himself and, you know, those around him because of how good he is and how good he is in the corners as well. You know, you don't get skilled elite guys going to the corners that much. They kind of shy away from it. But, you know, he has no hesitation going in there. And, you know, that's why I like, you know, why I like the guy that much, because he'll go to those gritty, hard to go areas and he'll still come out with a puck. He'll still dish out some good assists. And, yeah, for me, he's a complete sort of all-round player. And no question in my mind he's better than McDavid, and you know they both are generational players. You know, there's 10 years between them and the game has changed a bit since, you know, Sid came on the scene and now McDavid. But you know, for me, that's another point. You know, McDavid is, you know, he's not as physical. Sid's had to endure more hits. He's had to endure, you know, the physicality of the game, whereas McDavid is kind of, he can skate around guys and not worry about getting his head took off. And whereas Sid's, you know, guys in the past when you've been playing against people like Bugard and, you know, McGrattan and those boys, you know, you've got to have your wits about you. And, yeah, McDavid's not really had that kind of challenge, I guess.
Exactly. Sid's first 5-6 years, he had a target on him and people took advantage of it. He got brutalized, and you know, he had Asham and LaRocque played there, but there was years where he didn't have guys to protect him and people took advantage of it. So like you said, that's shines a bigger light on Sidney Crosby. And I always hated his guts just because I'm not a Pittsburgh fan until I started this podcast like 3 years ago and really started to like evaluate and watch the game at a different, you know, beyond a spectator's point. And yeah. It's clear as day. He's the best player in the NHL.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. And you know, I'm a fan of Ovi as well, but for me, you know, for me, Crosby is the full package, is the better all round player. And you know, if you look at them both, they've both got speed to burn, and you know, both capable of carrying you know, the team on the backs. But for me, you know, Crosby is better. They've got, they're similar to an extent, but they're also very different. They both like to attack off the rush, and but for me, McDavid's all speed and hands, whereas Sid's a better skater. He can turn on a sixpence, whereas McDavid's more north to south kind of skater, and whereas Sid is more dynamic with his skating and his power, and you know, he's just a better all round player. He's a good forechecker. He likes to work the boards well. You know, he shoots from tight angles, and you know, he likes to catch goalies off with his quick release. Whereas McDavid likes to kind of go into the slot, and you know, he hangs onto the puck a bit more. And yeah, they're both very different players in that sense.
I think there's a reason that Sidney isn't as fast as Connor, because I think he realized he doesn't need to be to do what he needs to do. Like you said, he's the best skater in the NHL. The way he can stop and turn and maneuver on, you know, if there was something smaller than a dime, I would say it, but there's not. He is, it's remarkable to see how well he can ice skate.
No, absolutely. And, you know,
and he's not slow.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I'm envious when I play rec hockey and stuff. Now I look at my skating, I'm like, oh, geez, I'm brutal. You know, when I see, like, films and stuff. And you've got guys like Crosby who make it look so easy and so effortless. And, yeah, it's frustrating because you're like, damn, why does the guy make it look so easy?
And then I hate it, too. Like, he's just such a good human as well. Like, doing the shit with the Kenyan hockey team, like, donates his time to Tim Hortons, like, on the weekend of, like, fucking make people's lives. Like, he's just an incredible guy, and he's worn me down. I love Sidney Crosby. I don't think I've ever said it, but I just did. He's the best.
You know, I was the same as you, William. I, you know, when he first came on the scene, and, you know, you kind of buy into the hype, and you see, oh, yeah, he's a crybaby, and you kind of jump on the bandwagon. But it's only when, like you say, you look at the game differently from a more analytical sort of perspective, and you break the game down, you actually see how good he really is. And you know, a different analogy is when I was younger, my mum, she used to listen to the Beatles all the time, and used to drive me crazy because it's all I used to hear growing up. And you know, I was like, oh god, you know, can you put something else on? This is crap. And it's only when you get older you realize how much they did for music and how they changed the world of music. And it's similar with Crosby. You know, a lot of people give him stick, and they still do. And you know, I guess with that is a jealousy factor of a lot of fans and things. And you know, keyboard warriors guys all, you know, chirping from behind a keyboard and that sort of thing. But for me, he is, you know, unrivaled out there in the NHL. He is the best player bar none out there.
Well, I'll tell you this right now. Fuck the Beatles. No. I am in the same way. My mom was always listening to the Beatles. Now I like it, but yeah, it's easy to put on at dinner time. I have, you know, three kids, and I can't really be playing Prostitute Disfigurement at dinner. So I'll put the Beatles on, and you know, everybody can smile and have a good time.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I just appreciate them. I wouldn't say I'm a, you know, a huge fan of them, but it's just changed my perspective on them growing up. But yeah, I'm more into, shall we say, a different kind of music to the Beatles. So yeah, definitely.
Well, you heard it here. Scott is the Beatles' number one fan. His podcast is out next week. he'll be breaking down the Beatles album song for song, minute by minute.
I'll just have to put on a Liverpool Scouse accent and sound like I'm from Liverpool and sound like a Beatle and get a bowl haircut. And then I'll
do you want to do some acid, Dewey Cox? Now, this is something that, you know, I've heard about in you know, a few hockey podcasts, but, you know, there's been teams that have had toxic is 2018. People love to say that word, but locker rooms that have been kind of shit shows the past few years, you know, being Ottawa and different teams. And people are saying that Columbus seems to be that next team where having Panarin and Bob being on years where they'll be unrestricted free agents next year will kind of cranking and turning this team around. You know, And I had sent this topic to you before last night's overtime win, where Panarin seemed to be happier to be on this team than I've ever seen him in his career. So maybe it's just media bullshit, but I don't know if that's not going out. Maybe that's because I'm closer to that team. Just wanted to see what your thoughts were on that. And it's kind of a toxic locker room environment, which is absolutely a real thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, a lot of teams refer to some players as like cancers in the locker room. You know, it's a crude sort of horrible way to sort of say it. But yeah, like you say, toxic. And, you know, that negativity often breeds negativity within a hockey team. It only takes, I guess, one bad apple to spoil the cart, so to speak. And, I mean, it's a tough one because, I mean, Columbus, I think they're third in the Metropolitan now.
Yeah.
And when you've got a coach like Torts who divides opinion anyway, you know, he's a very vocal, heart-on-your-sleeve type of guy, and I like how vocal he is. You know, he's a very fiery character. It does make you wonder, and Panarin is a great talent. He's an amazing player, and he's putting up some good numbers again. But, you know, it's hard to say because they don't really know the guy and the character of Panarin. But if he does have like a chip on his shoulder, then you know it's at what cost does it help carrying a great player? But he also might bring a lot of baggage with him, and you know he might be a divisive character in the locker room. It's a tough one, but you know you've got a lot of good young players there, and you know guys like Duclair and Dubois and those sort of players, and you know, I'm sure you know Columbus will climb up the standings, and it's a tough one. I don't really know, but media do play a role in I guess hyping teams or creating a bit of a bullshit kind of way around them. And you know, my team, I'm a Maple Leaf fan for my sins, and you know, we've got no worse media in the league than Toronto. Yeah. The pressure what's under, you know, the players in Toronto and yeah, it's pretty crazy up there, and you only have to see what the media can do, particularly even with the Nylander situation and what's going on to create a bit of a shitstorm.
Oh, yeah. And it's like, you know, when Duchesne was in Colorado, they weren't winning. When he left, they did well. Ottawa, they had Carlson and Hoffman and all that crazy shit that happened last year. They weren't doing well.
Yeah.
Columbus is doing well. Yes, the two Russians on the team might not be Blue Jackets again, but it seems like Panarin is at least focused on doing his best this year to maybe get a better contract. And it seems that Bob might be, I don't want to say he's checked out because he's had rough times in his career before.
Yeah.
But like you said, at what cost do you let this happen? If Bob is not, and it's not going to help Bob being bad, like it's not going to get him more money, you know, on a contract year. So unless he's just, you know, this is mentally drawing on him and maybe he wants to be in Columbus and they're not offering him the money once, all that kind of shit that, you know, only Bob and the general managers at Columbus would know. But they're still winning. Like you said, being third in the Metro is nothing to shake a stick at. So maybe I'm starting to think more it's just kind of hoopla. And at the end of the day, there's nothing I can do about it anyhow. So I can't have a meeting with these guys.
Yeah, that'd be. I'd love to be in that room if you did, and love to be a fly on the wall of what would be said on there. There'd be a few F bombs rolling, you know, down in a few beers with the guys.
But, oh fuck, dude! I'd be on Putin's fucking hit list after those meetings, dude.
It'd be you'd be getting Novichoks over in Salisbury or something. You know, and,
now, what do you think about the whole Nylander thing going on? You know, he wants eight, they're saying six. I don't think he's going to get eight anywhere, but you know, maybe his agent's telling him he is, or he wouldn't be holding so fast. So as a Maple Leaf fan, where do you kind of stand? Because they're winning without him. I know Matthews is now day to day, but they're kind of showing that anybody can kind of step in there.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I like Nylander, but now we've got like Johnny Tavares, you know, back, and we've got a good team, and I think you know we can afford to not be without him. And for me, if he, you know, if he's holding out for a bigger deal and his heart's not, you know, in the right place, then you know, onwards and upwards.
That's what I say, man.
Yeah, you know, if there's a famous saying, and you know, I don't know if it's a North American one or, but in the UK they say, you know, if you make your bed, you've got to lie in it. And you know, if he's holding out for a bigger contract and he wants to, you know, get some bigger money elsewhere, then you know, goodbye, William, and yeah, thank you for your time, but you know, piss off and find another team, sort of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a tough one because Toronto, they get hammered with attacks and things, don't they? So I guess part of it is he's trying to negate some of the tax, what he'll get taxed on by wanting a bigger wage, and
right.
It's a tough situation. But you know, guys like
Kapanen, Tavares has fucking turned it up.
Yeah, exactly. Matthews, Tavares, Marner, you know, Kadri, Hainsey, you know, we've got a good team, and Marlowe is not exactly firing on all cylinders, but you know, when you've got a guy who's a veteran, who's older, you know, he's going to get shown up by a quicker, fast skating young team, I guess.
And I think Marlowe's benefit to that team is something that cannot be measured in stats.
Yeah, he's that calming figure, I guess, in the locker room, and
yeah,
that experience.
I think his
player
presence there is huge.
Oh yeah, you know, the guy's got presence. He's been there before. He's you know, the level he's played at and the years he's played in San Jose and the experience he's gained. Like you say, that's more invaluable than the points. But you know, for me, going back to Nylander, you know, I'd be happy to part ways. And you know, Toronto now a good force, a good team. I mean, they've only lost 3 in the last 11 games. You know, losses to St. Louis, Pittsburgh, Ottawa. You know, they're doing well. They're on a tear. And you know, the number of points and the number of goals we're scoring in games, it's good to see, and you know, long may it continue.
Now, Scott, Belfast Giants are 9-4-0, and Sheffield Steelers are 5-10-0. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it's not good. It's certainly not a good situation for Sheffield to be in. It's tough times, but I guess when you've got 16. Player changes, you kind of get rid of the core of the team.
Yeah, that's fucking crazy.
Yeah, there's a lot of players have sort of retired and whatnot, and there've been guys who've retired through injury. So we've had to replace the core to an extent. But the coach, Paul Thompson, he's recently sort of parted ways with the team. It was, well, they say it was by mutual consent, but I don't know how much of it was mutual. But yeah, he's no longer there, and they've got former Pittsburgh Penguin goaltender Tom Barrasso, who's the head coach now. So
shit.
He's, you know, it's a tough one because Barrasso is he's a good coach. He's got a good CV. He was a goalie coach in Carolina, and he's coached in Europe and the KHL, and he's got a really good pedigree. But he's inherited a poor team, and you know, it's tough because you can only work with the tools you've got, I guess. And the team we've got now, it's like we've got 3 third lines out there. There's a lot of grinders and a lot of, you know, hardworking players, but not much offensive sort of uptake. And we've Steelers have had a bit of a tough time with injuries, but it's a tough one. Whereas Belfast, you know, they've got a great team. They're struggling with injuries at the minute. I believe the game they're playing tonight, they're currently losing 2-0 to Nottingham. And they've got 4 or 5 players out. Belfast, they've got Dwyer's out injured. They've got a couple of British guys who are really good players. Colin Shields, who's played in North America for a little while, he's out injured. He's, you know, he's an integral part of the team. They've got a few injuries and they're banged and beaten up at the minute, but they've got a great coach in Adam Keefe, Belfast, you know, brother of Sheldon Keefe, who I think he just won the AHL title with the Marlies last season. And Adam Keefe's doing well. He's a, you know, a fairly young rookie coach, and he's had a couple of years behind him, but he played the game a physical, sort of hard, gritty way. Dropped the gloves a lot, and
loved Adam Keefe.
He was tough. You know, he was pound for pound one of the toughest players to play in the UK, without
fucking
a doubt. I'd probably say he's up there with Paul Ferrone
for sure.
Who's one of the toughest to play over here, you know, for his height. And a great guy too. You know, I speak to Keith for a little bit, and you know, a really good guy, really grounded, nice guy who's you know, done really well. And you know, I'd say they're like my second team. I wouldn't say I root for them, but you know, if I wasn't a Steelers fan, I'd probably be a Giants fan.
Nice. Now it's week 8 over there. How many weeks do they end up playing in the season?
They play right through until April. So,
oh, wow, okay.
The playoff weekend is in April, but they tend to only have two games a week, not like the NHL, where they seem to have like five games a week or something crazy.
Right.
But with the different competitions we're in, it does amount to, you know, quite a few games in a season, so it probably amounts to around 65 games, roughly 65, 70 games. So it's not like the NHL season with, you know, 82 games, and then if you get into the playoffs, you've got, you know, several more on top. But there's a lot of travel involved, and, you know, there's no planes like, you know, in North America. It's all buses and coaches. You know, there's like 8, 10-hour, 12-hour journeys to Scotland and Cardiff and things like that. So there's a lot of travel involved, but, you know, it's a good league, what seems to be on the up each year, and the caliber of players who come over, you know, that seems to improve every year as well.
Now, how do they run the playoffs over there? How many teams make it?
It's a playoff weekend, so leading up to the playoffs, it's the top eight teams. Then you play like a one home, one away type of knockout series, and then the final four go through to the playoff weekend in Nottingham, where it's tend to be. They've been the host team, or the host venue, should I say, for the last probably about 10 years now, even longer. And yeah, the playoff weekend's good, but I'd like a longer playoff series. I'd like a more North American style format. I'd scrap maybe the Challenge Cup competition that we have, and probably have a longer playoff series, because I love that kind of playoff hockey, that, you know, all guns blazing sort of, you know, style play. But I think it's more a logistical thing with the arenas, and because over in, you know, in the UK, the hockey teams don't tend to be the main tenants. They tend to have concerts and comedians and things like that that take priority. So I think April time, if they were to extend the playoffs, I think it'd be more a logistical thing for the arenas and things like that, rather than something that could happen, unfortunately.
What is something strictly Sheffield that you wouldn't find anywhere else in the world?
Ooh, good question. I'd probably say something called Henderson's Relish. It's like a sauce that you put on things like pies and pastry type things. It's a really nice sauce. It's a bit like, I don't know if you guys have Worcester sauce over there. It's a really nice sauce called Henderson's. So I'd probably say that's a good Sheffield thing. They've also got the oldest football team in the world, Sheffield FC. They date back, oh God, a couple hundred years. They were the first established football team in the world. As well as that, I guess, you know, some good bands have come out there. Def Leppard from Sheffield, good rock band, Arctic Monkeys, the actor Sean Bean, who was in Game of Thrones.
Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, Lord of the Rings, Sean Bean, yeah.
He's awesome. He's a
good old Sheffield boy.
Hell yeah, fucking that guy's the shit.
Yeah, it's a shame he didn't last longer in Game of Thrones.
I always thought that was bullshit, how they killed him off in the first season. Spoiler alert, but fuck you if you haven't seen Game of Thrones yet.
Well, if you haven't seen it yet, geez, you know, you need to catch up with the times.
Yeah, he gets his head cut off, just so you know.
you deserve a spoiler for not watching it by now. But, I love Sean Bean, and it was good to hear a good Yorkshire accent in there. And, it's a shame they killed him off, like you say.
For sure, man. Well, in the spirit of the holiday, now I don't know if you're a big horror movie guy, but do you have a favorite horror movie, since it is Halloween is coming up here in the States, and just seems right to ask?
Do you know what? I'm probably I'm a bit of a pussy with like scary films and stuff like that, and I'm not really a fan of horror movies. But if I did, I'd probably go for something like a classic like Halloween or Psycho.
There you go.
The old Alfred Hitchcock sort of ones. Or maybe like It or something like that. But, you know, the newer ones like the Insidious and, the Blair Witch the Paranormal Activities, those sort of ones like freak me out a bit. They're almost like too real, if that makes sense. And I went to see Paranormal Activity at the cinema years ago. And I remember driving on the way home, and I was like seeing things in my wing mirror, and I was like hallucinating, and I couldn't get to sleep that night. So I'm a bit of a wimp when it comes to horror movies, but I'd probably go with one of the old classics, like I say, like Psycho or Halloween.
Hey, you can't beat those, man. That's funny. One of my my friends, Garrett, I fucking forget what the name of his band is now. Sorry, Butter, I'd plug your band, but he gets really terrified in horror movies, so it was always fun to watch. Because he jump scares and he gets fucking like really terrified. So it's always fun to watch horror movies with him. But speaking of Halloween, my son, he's 8. And he said last weekend, he goes, you know, Michael Myers doesn't look scary to me. And I told my wife, I said, I think I'm going to let him watch Halloween just so, you know, he thinks he's all big and bad to see how he sleeps there. So I think next weekend I'm going to play him Halloween and see how that goes.
Nice. That'd be sick. That'd be a good, you know, retro, old school education for him, making him watch that.
There's no way he won't have nightmares. That fucking movie's terrifying.
You know, if he doesn't have nightmares, then geez, you know, I'd get him to a doctor and see if he's okay. Because maybe get him to lace up the skates and he'd do a good job on the ice if he's not scared or you know, that sort of film.
He is my son though, so he might be okay.
Yeah, right. So, definitely.
Well, Scott, dude, this has been an absolute pleasure, man. Tell the Bisky Babies where they can find you online. You're a great follow on Twitter, especially for EIHL news. So just give them your plugs there.
Yeah, thank you. You know, it's been great, William. You know, I've really enjoyed being on, and yeah, we'll keep in touch. And hopefully, if I get the podcast set up, then hopefully I can return the favor, and you can maybe come on mine sometime.
Anytime, man.
Yeah, definitely. On Twitter, I'm probably more active on there, and my Twitter handle is @Cliffy, so that's CLIFFY94, @Cliffy94.
Fuck yeah, man. Well, thanks again, and you have a good day, buddy. I appreciate it.
Yep, anytime. Thanks again, William.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, if you didn't like that conversation, fuck you. That was brilliant. Scott and Cliff, everyone. Good old UK boy. Thanks for listening, guys. I really appreciate it. yeah, just trucking along. I've been doing the 2 episodes. It seems to be going good. Everybody's listening. Sorry for my voice again. I apologize. And if you've made it this far and you haven't gone back and listened to some of the classic episodes with Riley Cote, Scott Parker, Darren from Fourth Line Voice, those are always good ones. The Shane Guilfoyle episodes. Val James, Colin Chamberlain, which I saw on Andy Picaro, Scorgi. I mean, just go back to some of these. They're not really, you know, time signature. They kind of are just conversations about hockey. So go to the back catalog. Fucking listen up. Don't be an idiot. Please go rate and review us on iTunes. 5 stars. I've said it before. It's how we show up on people's algorithms is through the review system. That's how iTunes works. It's no secret that that's what they're doing. So if you could do that, it helps spread the word of the biscuit. It's really easy to do. Just click 5 stars, write something. Spotify, Stitcher, all that stuff. I don't know how they work on reviews and all that, but you know, most of the listens are from iTunes. So I would appreciate that, guys. Check out hairlessapeinc.com. Go buy a shirt, Biscuit10. Save 10% off. Parker's Platoon, go check them out. Parkersplatoon.org. It's Scott Parker and Francesca Parker's nonprofit organization to help one veteran at a time. Lucid Float Spas out of Mount Vernon, Ohio. Go take a float. I love you guys. Thanks for listening to the show. Have a good weekend.